welcome to KFM 88.1 FM, Grand Junction, Colorado. My name is Rick Castellini.
I'm Adam Cochran.
And this is the Noontime Public Affairs / Castellini on Computers, Cochran Answers, Computer Questions and Answers, Technology, anything you want to talk about for technology.
Extravaganza.
There you go, the extravaganza for an entire hour. So give us a call today, 970-241-8801, extension 1.
That's right.
Is the phone number, 970-241-8801, extension 1. Or this month, at the behest of my young colleague across the table from me, he got me on Twitter this past month, and you can Twitter us at Help Me Rick. So it's at Help Me Rick if you're a Twitter user, and we'll try to find, if you Twitter us a question, we'll answer the question. Or again, you can call us the good old-fashioned way, 970-241-8801, extension 1. I think one more time. We have to do that once per half hour, I think.
Yeah.
So we'll do that again. But other than that, the show is yours. Take it over. Give us a call. 970-241-8801, extension 1, or Twitter us at Help Me Rick.
There you go.
And the website, by the way, kind of ties in, is helpmerick.com.
Wow.
That's kind of
interesting.
What do
you know? Yeah, no, that's weird how that works. And your name is Rick.
And my name's Rick.
Oh, my gosh.
It somehow all ties together.
That is incredible.
In some very symbiotic way.
I'd say, yeah, that's amazing. Wow.
All right, well, what's going on this month for you, Mr.
Man.
Adam?
All kinds of stuff. There's, again, we just want to remind people that they can give us a call if they have any questions or any comments that they'd like to make about technology. We've had a lot of news stuff happen lately.
Mm-hmm.
Probably the most recent thing that's happened in technology that 17 million people are probably interested in is more than that, isn't it?
For what?
For the iPhone. The iPhone 3.0 software.
Well, they announced yesterday that since the first version of the iPhone,
right,
that they released just less than 2 years ago,
uh-huh,
they've sold over 30 million units.
Okay. Yeah. So I think it's up 17 million.
But the 30 million year was between the iPhone and the iPod Touch.
Oh, okay.
That's the combo.
I gotcha. Well, we do have a phone call already. Let's go ahead and get to our phones, and we'll talk more about technology. Hi, you're on the KFM Public Affairs with Rick and Adam. How are you?
Good, thanks.
Good. You know what? Turn down your radio in the background, and we've got a little bit of an echo there. But go ahead.
I want to ask a question for my daughter. She's shopping for a new computer, and she's been shopping around, and the salesman tell her she should pay them $150 and remove the pop-ups that are going to be on her computer when she buys it.
She can do that herself.
If she follows the instructions on Help Me Rick on how to set up a new computer, will it take care of that?
That'll very much take care of that.
What a great answer. What a great plug for the website.
Thank you. And this isn't my wife, I don't think.
Nope.
Yeah, if you just go in, really one of the main things you do is just go into the control panel, into add, remove programs, and remove anything that's garbage. And that means all the sample software that comes on there, the trials, the music software you don't plan on using, all of that stuff. Just take that stuff off. Then put on a good antivirus. We like AVG. And that right there will get you most of the way there.
I don't believe they can tell people with a straight face they should pay $150.
I agree. And you know what's funny is they don't really take off a lot of that garbage. They actually put on their own garbage.
They'll sell you other software that you don't need.
Usually they give you a Trend Micro is usually what they give you. Mm-hmm. They take off the Norton trial and put on Trend Micro, which is replacing one bad product with another. And it's really funny. I agree with you. I think they overcharge you and they shouldn't. I don't know. I don't know how they can do it with a straight face.
Well, we know salespeople are hardworking folks out there, but they are salespeople.
That's exactly right.
So when you get advice from salespeople, you got to keep reminding yourself they're not computer experts, they're salespeople. And even the folks that claim to be the computer experts sitting behind the desks in white shirts are not tech people either.
Right. Right. Okay?
All right. Well, thanks for your help.
Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. And she's referring to an article we wrote on the website at helpmerick.com a few years ago on how to set up a new computer.
Right.
Because there is some things you need to do. There are some things you need to do to get your computer up and running solid so you don't have problems down the line.
Exactly.
So make sure you do that.
And we have everything on Help Me Rick from shopping to the computer to when you get it home, how to take it out of the box the right way, to the process, the order in which you should hook things up. How soon should you hook it to the internet? Should you put your antivirus on before you uninstall programs? Things like that. So we've got all those details there, and it's all step by step. And I think it's about a 4 or 5 page article, but it's very easy to go through.
Yeah, just make sure you're thorough with it. 970-241-8801, extension 1. We have another caller.
Yeah, we do. Hi, you're on the Public Affairs KFM with Rick and Adam. What can we do for you?
Hey, Mr. Adam.
Hey.
This is Chuck in Grand Junction. I wish to thank Rick for his help on finding a program to wipe off the stuff before you give a computer away.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, good. Okay, good.
And also, I was wondering how the progress was with the users group for Linux.
I'm glad you asked that. I found a potential meeting spot for us, and I'll be posting it up on the website pretty soon and see how many people are interested. And we'll hopefully get an initial meeting either later this month or early next month.
Cool.
Fun.
All right. It's good to see Adam up in the public view here.
Isn't it? Once in a while, I'm still around. I'm not just hiding in the shadows.
A likely story.
Maybe a little bit more than usual.
Okie dokie.
We appreciate the call, Chuck.
Okay, thank you.
Have a good day.
Bye-bye.
Thanks.
970-241-8801, extension 1. We are going to be here again next Tuesday, which would be, what's today? Today's the 18th. So next Tuesday would make that the 24th for KFM annual fund drive. So be sure to tune in again next Tuesday and all week long and donate what you can to the cause. And we'll be here next Tuesday helping out the cause as well. So we'll be back again next week on Tuesday. But again, this week, our topic, we didn't get a chance to do a lot of pre-show topic talk this week, but we kind of threw out the idea of tying in technology with the economy.
Right.
And we know that any of us that are into technology, even a little bit, know that it can be a sinkhole if you let it be. And our first caller, the young woman who called in about adding $150 onto the price of a computer so that they can do something you can do by yourself, is a good example of wasting money in technology.
Right.
So I thought we'd kind of talk a little bit about that today.
Yeah.
In between calls.
Absolutely.
And Twitters. I'm curious if anybody's going to Twitter us.
Yeah.
At Help Me Rick. That's our Twitter. Help Me Rick. And if you want to send us a tweet, we'll answer your question at Help Me Rick. And again, the phone number 970-241-8801, extension 1. One thing related to money and the economy and computers and all that kind of thing that really has gotten I'm almost thinking of buying a domain name, and I'm not going to reveal what that is yet, but there's been a lot of news stories this week about how Microsoft has muscled in on the netbook,
right,
on the netbook operating system frenzy.
Yeah.
Because when netbooks, those little bitty miniature laptops first came out, they were primarily Linux.
Yeah.
And the reason why is they were real small. These little laptops are small. They don't have a lot of power. And in order to run Windows, you have to have a fair amount of power. And so they came out with some real nice customized versions of Linux, but they found, unfortunately, it was kind of almost an AOL-ish kind of a phenomenon where people that were buying the netbooks that weren't super technologically oriented, they got a little confused because they didn't see the start button.
Uh-huh.
And so they immediately started calling tech support and talking to the manufacturer saying, I don't know what to do with this.
Right.
So apparently there was a high return rate on the Linux netbooks.
They've kind of changed that, though. I don't know if you've heard the recent stories that there weren't as many as returns as what they'd said.
Okay.
And also the returns weren't all because it was Linux. A lot of them were returned for other reasons, that they thought it was a more powerful computer, or
they didn't know what it was for.
Their programs. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so that's why I'm curious. I'm curious to kind of beef something up on the internet about this more than just a few articles on the news sites.
Right.
Because it seems to me that a lot of people are buying netbooks are like you and I, a little bit more technologically oriented.
Right.
Somebody that already has one or two other computers, but we want a utility computer.
Yeah.
And that's
absolutely
what a netbook becomes. And they are inexpensive, but you don't necessarily use it every single day. So you don't want it to be something you have to maintain with the antivirus and the updates and all that kind of stuff. So I think that I'm seeing that on the internet, anyway, on some of the little netbook websites that have come up, that a lot of people are buying the Windows-based netbooks, but blipping Windows off there and putting Linux on there, or splitting it and doing the dual boot thing.
Right.
So tying this all back into the money is Ubuntu Linux and all these different Linux derivatives out there are free, And one of my big things for helping people with the computers these days is they're all wondering about Windows 7, or if they're in the market for a Windows Vista machine, they say, what should I do? First thing I always ask people is, what do you do with your computer?
Exactly.
And if they're doing word processing, internet, digital photography, and those kinds of things, chances are if their computer is 7 years or newer, even if it's in that 7 year old, in, you know, seven's getting a little bit aging, but if it's 7 years old or newer, and if they're only doing those things, if they upgrade their RAM, they can probably stay with Windows XP and go forward. Because I found out there's still a lot of people out there running Windows XP with 128 megabytes of RAM or 256 megabytes of RAM. And that's just not enough oomph for the computer.
Right.
And keep in mind, folks out there, that RAM is different from your hard drive. Hard drive is your storage. RAM is your working memory. And your computer needs a fair amount of working memory to give you the feeling that it's percolating along at a good speed. And upgrading your RAM oftentimes is way under $100 to do that, and your computer is going to feel like a new computer after you do it. So that's my number one thing on keeping the cost down on your computer. You don't need a new computer. Just get it looked at. You may need to upgrade some RAM, maybe do some other cleanup on the computer, and your 6 to 7 year old computer or newer will feel like new. So that's one of my tips today to fight the recession technology.
So two ways, there are two things to avoid having to go out and buy a new computer.
Mm-hmm.
One, you might be able to switch it to Ubuntu, switch the operating
system. You
could
do that too, yeah.
Or like you said, adding memory.
Mm-hmm.
Those two things right there will usually give life to an older system.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing you mentioned too, I'm just repeating what you said, but the other thing too is the netbook might be an answer. It might give you the added ability. Instead of going out there and buying a full-fledged laptop,
mm-hmm.
you might want to go out there. A netbook is a very small-screened laptop, usually a 7 to 10-inch, or 9 to 10-inch monitor.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just made for surfing the web, doing internet, word processing.
Light digital photography.
Very light. More storage of pictures, I would say.
Although I have a client, Adam, that I thought was an ingenious thing to do. She bought a netbook.
Uh-huh.
And she bought I guess she already had a 19-inch or 20-inch flat panel monitor.
Sure.
So she bought the netbook and an external hard drive.
Yeah.
And an external keyboard and mouse,
uh-huh.
cordless.
Yeah.
And she uses the netbook as her computer.
Main computer, yeah.
And she hooks up the external monitor and the mouse and the keyboard.
For what most people do, that's all the power that they need.
And she says it works fantastic.
Yeah.
And when she travels, she just unplugs those cables and takes the little netbook
with
her.
Absolutely, yeah.
So I think that's another nice idea. Like you're mentioning, a netbook for $300 to $350, I don't think you want to. To me, when you start getting up at that $400 to $450 range, you might as well buy a full
There's
notebook.
Some Acers out there that have 15-inch monitors and 3 or 4 gigs of RAM for $399.
Right.
So you don't want to spend too much unless you want a full-size laptop. But, boy, the netbooks are just incredible. I mean, I use my netbook. I have a laptop. My laptop is even a 13-inch screen. It's not a large laptop, but I have already used my netbook. I just bought it 3 weeks ago, something like that. I've already used it more than I've ever used my laptop, and I've had my laptop.
And you find
for well
using
over
it for troubleshooting and your?
Well, I use it for everything.
During your day-to-day stuff, just pulling it out.
I kept Windows on it. I didn't switch over to Ubuntu because of that. I wanted to be able to run virus scans or stuff like that on other people's computers. So I probably use it a little bit more heavily than what I intended it for.
Right.
But I've been really happy that I have it, and
it's working well for you.
Pull it out almost every day. I pull it out once or twice.
And Adam and I are holding up our hands to the cameras.
Yeah.
And if you're scared that the keyboards are too small, Adam and I have very non-diminutive hands.
I have what have always been called Vienna sausage fingers, and those are very short fingers, very fat fingers, but it works.
And you can type 70, 80 words a minute on the netbook, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah,
all
absolutely.
970-241.
About 60, probably.
I know. Yeah. I'm being facetious, but I know you're quick on it. 970-241-8801, extension 1 is the phone number, or you can Twitter us at HelpMeRick. I'm just curious. We haven't got one yet, a tweet.
Really?
I'm hoping we're going to get a
My
tweet.
My Twitter is TalkingDigital.
So you can
get me at twitter.com/TalkingDigital.
Do you still have yours coming into text messaging?
Oh, yeah.
Do you?
Oh, yeah.
Do you?
Only the ones that are to me. Direct reply.
Not all ones you're following. Gotcha.
I have yours and ones that are to me coming to my phone and some of those.
Because I finally shut that off because that gets kind of.
Yeah, I don't even mess. Only the direct Twitters, the at replies. A few Twitter tips. Have you been playing with any of those?
Well, let's explain what Twitter is because a lot of people are saying, what is Twitter?
This has nothing to do with saving money, I guess, but It's still interesting.
It's free.
It still comes up. Yeah.
It's free.
It's okay, it's text messaging.
So what is Twitter? If somebody out there has never heard of it, or maybe they've heard of it and they're going, I feel like I'm in the dark. What is Twitter?
The first thing I'll say about it is people who hear what Twitter is and think it sounds like a stupid idea, mm-hmm. they're probably right for mm-hmm. them. For most people, you get zero use out of Twitter.
And I was
Twitter.
In that camp.
Yeah, exactly.
I wasn't that it was a stupid idea. I was in the camp that says, I don't know what I would do with that.
I don't think you realized what Twitter could do for you. Mm-hmm. And I think some people are in that boat. But if you have a business or if you have a group of people that you're somewhat tech savvy, Twitter is a great way to kind of keep in touch with everybody. Basically what it is Twitter, you go to twitter.com, and you set up a little short free account with a username and password. That account will kind of be your own personal little website, and it'll be twitter.com/whatever yours is. In your case, it's Help Me Rick. My case, it's Talking Digital. And what it is from your cell phone or from your laptop, whatever, you go in and you just text message to the Twitter account. So
you only have 140 characters.
From your cell phone, you have 140 characters. You Twitter it, I think it's 40404, I think.
Something like that.
You Twitter to that number, you text to that number.
But you have to be a member to text to that number.
Yeah. Anything you text to that number after you've joined up Twitter shows up on the website. And the question that they're asking is, what are you doing? Some people take that very literally and they say, I'm watching TV, I'm doing whatever. Most people, though, find right away that it's more fun to just Twitter a thought, right, to put out what they're thinking at that time. And anything that you Twitter becomes visible to everybody who's on,
following
everybody who's on Twitter.com. Well,
that's
everybody
true.
Can see it.
That's true.
But then what you can do is go in and follow people so that you can see kind of a news feed of everything that those people who you're following, everything that they're saying. Well, at first, Twitter was just kind of a fun little thing. People would put in what they're doing or what their thoughts were for the whole community to see. Then they started following people, and then now they're using it as ways to actually get their news and get information. You can go in and look at the news feed of Twitter, and you can search Twitter. You don't even have to be a member to do that. You can go into Twitter and search it. Just type in any term that you want. For example, yesterday you type in iPhone or iPhone
3.0,
AIG, type in something like yesterday. That, and you can see what everybody's saying about that.
Mm-hmm.
When they had the plane crash in the Hudson a while back, you could type in Hudson and you could actually see what are called tweets, these little short text messages from all the people who are actually standing there on the Hudson watching the whole thing happen. And so, you know, there are the fires that took place in California or even Australia. You're able to keep up with news there. And
it almost makes blogs look old.
Yeah. Yeah. It's microblogging is what the, mm-hmm. the term was that they used for a long time for it. It's little short messages that you put up. And at first it just kind of seems like a novelty or
right.
a trivial thing. But when you get to use it, and you have a lot of other friends who are using it, then it's a great way to kind of keep in touch with each other, much like Facebook, but a lot more mobile.
Well, and I'm curious, too. You, the other day, are teaching a class for Adobe.
Right.
And you Twittered to some Adobe people that you were looking for some tips.
Right.
Did that help?
Absolutely.
Did you
yeah.
get any?
Yeah. Got
oh,
several
cool.
tips.
I forgot
I
to go back to your site and see if anybody responded.
Yeah, well, actually, a lot of them just kind of, I just saw in there by searching for Adobe. Some of them came back to me, some of them didn't, but some of them knew who I was and sent me a message instead, so text
cool.
messaged me. But yeah, I was able to get several people. Some
got
people
some said, good ideas?
Yeah. And
good.
It came through. I did the same thing on Facebook. It's kind of a way of cloud sourcing ideas, and that maybe that's too much lingo, but it's a way of throwing an idea out there or a question mm-hmm. out there and people answering you. If you ever wanted to say, I'm thinking about buying, you know, a Macintosh, what do you think?
Right.
You've got tons of people who message you back, and that's kind of a way of forming another little social group, too.
And I think it's one of those things, too, once it reaches a critical mass, the more people using the service, the more useful the service
exactly.
gets.
Exactly.
And I think that's what we're kind of getting, is
yeah.
that it's finally getting, like you said, people are starting to hone in on how to use it. So it seems to be becoming more useful.
Right.
Instead of just kind of the novelty.
Or they're changing the way it's used, because really the people who designed Twitter didn't design it with a use. They said, let's put this out there and see what happens. The mm-hmm. guy who designed Twitter is actually one of the designers for Blogger.com before Google bought him.
I didn't know that.
Same guy who developed it. And so basically they put this platform out there and they said, let's make this site that's like a little short blogging service and see what people do with it. Mm-hmm. And now they use it for gathering news. It was a great way to watch the debates during the election.
Mm-hmm.
You could go to twitter.com and hit the political button, and you could actually watch what everybody was saying during the debates.
And it gets a little overwhelming, too. There's so many people.
Well, it is.
It scrolls through.
It happens fast. But the cool part about it is they only have 140 characters.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not getting somebody's long 30-page rant about this political view versus that political view.
Right.
They only have 140 characters. And I've heard people, there's even this Twitter addiction that people have that not everybody, of course, but people get into it. I don't know if you've seen the news recently. There was a juror, I forget where it was, but this juror, right after they went on break,
mm-hmm.
after they decided on the verdict.
Okay.
But they hadn't handed down the verdict yet.
Oh.
So the guy texted, one of the jurors texted, "I just spent $12 million of someone else's money texted about the case."
Wow.
Then it kind of became popular. Now it might become a mistrial because of what that juror has done.
Because he jumped the gun.
Yeah. And I heard on one of the podcasts I listened to, one of the people was joking, and they said that it's so much an addiction they think in 140 characters now because they're always wondering what they can
which is a good
about.
Thing. I don't think that's a bad
Absolutely.
Thing.
Absolutely. It makes
brevity
it
does
precise.
Have its yeah, brevity does have its appeals because yeah. we do have so much information that it
yeah.
gets overwhelming, and so if you can titrate that information down into a small statement,
right.
it actually makes a more powerful impact.
Yeah.
And so that's what's kind of fun about
yeah.
that.
So people are out there who are interested in Twitter. Chances are your first 10 minutes with it are going to be pretty dull, and maybe even your first week with it is not a lot's going to happen there. But I would recommend going if you want to get into it. Find other people who you follow in the news or in the media, even locally. I know there's several news anchors that post stuff. The news channels put stuff. The Daily Sentinel put stuff on there. And follow them. And that will give you an idea of how Twitter works. You don't have to have a bunch of people following you. You may not even have anything to say.
Yeah, you may not have anything
but,
up at all.
But just going in there and following people and watching what happens. I find on Facebook, which is another we talked about that last month, on Facebook I follow people I know. I mm-hmm. go after them, and I pretty much have to have some form of relationship with them before I'll even consider putting them into Facebook.
Right.
But in Twitter, it's just the opposite. Twitter, I'm following famous people or people who I want to know what they have to say.
Right.
And I'm not interacting with them one-on-one at all. I might send them a quick message now and then, but really I'm more interested in what they have to say and what all is going on. And you'll find everything from the weather to
And I
to
think
the
what's going to happen with everything. Things like Twitter and Facebook is in the past month, just since we last broadcast last month, we've had two major newspapers in the country
yeah.
go under.
Yep.
Rocky Mountain News here in Denver, in Colorado,
yeah.
Colorado, is now gone. It was the oldest and largest newspaper in the state.
Yeah.
And then just yesterday was the last issue of the Seattle Post-Intelligencer,
yeah.
which was 156 years old or something like that, which was their oldest and largest newspaper in Washington. And they're going to do something interesting. The Rocky Mountain News is kind of going away, but the PI in Seattle, they're going to try to do an online paper.
And they're doing it. They're doing some cool stuff. I really encourage people to go online and really read about what they're doing because I had a great conversation with Byron Evers, who's the head of the Mass Communications Department at Mesa State College.
Were you talking about that?
And I sat down with him. It was the day that happened, and I don't know if he'd known all the story yet about uh-huh. what had happened with it. And he asked me, what do you think the future of news is as a product? Where are people going to get their news?
Well, that's what I was thinking. Twitter, I think, is
and
one of those things.
That's what I talked to him, and I think that some people can't quite grasp what news has become.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, well, where do you go for reliable news? Where do you go for sources where you trust? And my response to that is that I think that everybody who we trust has pretty much violated that trust at this point.
I agree.
And so people are looking for a place where they can get neutral news. They're not looking for a place where they can get unbiased news. They're not looking, they're going to go to see what the right side of the political spectrum is saying just as often as they are with the left side. And they're going to spend a lot of time researching. They're
right.
going to spend a lot of time going into factcheck.org or even places like Twitter. And they're going to get into debates with their friends or discussions with people online.
Well, I think what this might
do, make them a little smarter and more informed, I think.
We're kind of bringing our technology a little bit into politics, but I think they mix.
Yeah.
I think that with the downfall of newspapers, it seems to be, it's almost like a domino effect.
Right.
We're starting to see more and more of this happening. Atlanta is another place I've heard that may go without a newspaper pretty soon.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there was one up in Detroit, too.
Yeah.
That was also very close to closing. Yeah. And Chicago, I believe, has two major newspapers left.
Well, Tribune Company's been in trouble for a while.
Right. So, and one of theirs might go under. But I'm thinking what this might do, which is kind of fun, with the things like Twitter, the things like Facebook, Stumble, which you and I have done for quite a few years now. I think it's going to maybe bring more grassroots back.
Right.
Which I think has been absent.
Yeah.
I think grassroots movements and the involvement of the common person in government has been absent.
Right.
And I think that's part of the problems that we've had over the last quite a few years. And by quite a few years, I mean like 20 years.
Yeah.
And maybe this is going to jumpstart people really becoming aware of what is happening.
Yeah.
I'm not just getting a talking head.
I think when you go back in time, and this is oversimplifying it, and I realize that, so don't take that as my complete knowledge of American history, but things started with a pamphlet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we had the Thomas Paine, and we had even going back to, you know, Wittenberg and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
We have everything starting with pamphlets and starting with signs and starting with, you know, trying to spread a message.
Right.
And everybody was getting involved, but they had to get around the system that currently existed. And you know, back then it was a radical move. Today, I think it's kind of the norm. I think anybody can become a part of any kind of society they want to on the internet and get their message across back and forth between their members. And I think that that's sort of the same thing that's happening now. I don't think it's a revolution the way it was at the beginning of the country.
I think it could
country,
be, though.
But it sets those grounds for sure, which is kind of interesting. And I think it's something that it both scares and also excites people that people's voices are heard again, and they have a way of.
And it'll be interesting to see, because I think that I'm in that mid 40-ish type person where I didn't grow up with technology.
Right.
My first computer wasn't until I got way out of college.
Right.
You came in right out of college.
Yeah.
You had yours.
In college as
well. So you're kind of that little bit generation behind me. But then the generations ahead of us, the people in their 50s and 60s and 70s, technology has really taken them by surprise, because they've gone from basically the radio and TV to what we have now, and trying to incorporate and use all this kind of technology has been very much overwhelming for them. And I think it's going to, and even for my generation in the 40s, I see there's a big mix. There's some people that really get into it and understand it, and there's people like me who understand it but don't get into it until I kind of see that there's a need or maybe a benefit for me. And then I think there's the generation like you who are willing to experiment with it and use it right away. And I'm curious about what the generation behind us, the few generations behind us, do
using
with this technology.
Now.
Right.
Yeah.
Because I'm hoping that they use it for more than just saying, hey, let's go to a movie.
Yeah.
You know, let's.
Well,
you know,
it seems like they already are. I'm seeing younger and younger people making more brilliant statements, you know, in Facebook and things like that. Things where you can tell that they're really thinking. Now, whether they're right or wrong is a whole different discussion, but you can tell they're thinking about it. They're worried about it. And I think Obama, you know, during the whole campaign with him using Twitter and him using Facebook
and
YouTube and all that stuff really shows that. I think the reason he was able to reach out to all those people and accumulate so many people was because he used that new media.
He took advantage of the technology, which is crazy, because he did. He brought in a whole new generation of people into politics, and I think that's cool. So we should be able to see that. All right, well, we got on a little diatribe there about kind of Twitter and a little bit of politicky thing there, but you can give us a call with any of your technology questions or comments at 970-241-8801, extension 1, or you can try Twittering us at Help Me Rick or at Talking Digital.
There you go.
And this is Noontime Public Affairs at KAFM 88.1 Grand Junction,
Colorado. You know, we were talking, too, about saving money and making your computer last longer and all of those things. A few thoughts that came to my mind. We're changing topics completely here, but
we're getting back on topic.
Back on topic, I guess. But one thing that I thought about this week, I had happened two or three times already, so I wanted to make sure and mention this, and that is to blow your computer out once in a while. Take your computer and unplug all the cables, take it outside, and get some canned air. Don't use a vacuum. One of the reasons that you don't want to use a vacuum is that the vacuums cause the fans to spin the wrong direction and things like that. Also builds static. But get some canned air.
Usually not strong enough.
No.
And if it is strong enough, you're going to be sucking something out of there you don't want.
Yeah. So use some canned air and take it outside and just blow it outside, and really, because the dust causes an insulation.
Yep.
And I've seen a lot of computers lately that have died an early death because things were too warm in there. And I always see it when the weather changes. And this seems to be that's
particularly
happening.
If you have one of those desks that have the little slot for your tower,
right?
And you keep the door closed,
right?
And there's only a hole about the size of a grapefruit in the back of it. That is really going to be dusty, and it's really going to be hot. And the nice thing about the last, again, we talked earlier in the show about 6-7 year old computers and newer. Almost all of those have thumb screws nowadays.
Right.
Either that or a little lever, so it's easy to take the side off.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of people say, well, I don't know what to do with the cables after I disconnect it. I said, well, you can do a couple of things. You can either get some tape and put a piece of tape on the cable and a tape on the hole that it came out of and put AA, BB, et cetera,
right.
et cetera. Or take a photo. You have a digital camera, take a picture of it so you can see exactly where all the cables came
and
from.
And actually, the other trick is that you can't anymore, you can't plug the cables in the wrong place.
There are usually pretty
very few exceptions to that. I see some people try to put a USB port in their network port,
or
but it's usually pretty obvious.
USB and the FireWire.
Right.
Sometimes that's...
Yeah.
But yeah, take a picture or label it with some tape. That's easy to do. Or colored markers.
Yeah.
Get a couple colored markers and do it that way.
I guess what I'm trying to say is by plugging it in the wrong way, you're not going to hurt anything. You're not going to hurt anything. It just won't work. You
right.
just have to look at it again and plug it, and you'll get it right.
It's not that bad. It's well worth doing. If you have a laptop, you can still blow it out as well, and you just use the same air, kind of hold the laptop up on its side and maybe blow out the keyboard real well. Look for the vents that do vent your air through the computer, through the laptop, and those are usually on the side, and most laptops have a couple of vents underneath the laptop as well, which is why I always tell parents when they send their teenagers off to college with a new laptop, don't sit on the bed with your laptop.
Right.
Leave it on the comforter on, because you're going to be plugging up that hole, and it's going to get hot, and as Adam just mentioned,
it will kill it.
Heat is the number one killer of computers from a hardware perspective.
Yep. In fact, water won't kill a computer as quickly as heat will, usually.
Speaking of water, I
yes.
just read something interesting the other day that made sense, and just something I never thought of, but they were talking about recuperating or rehabilitating a cell phone or a piece of equipment that's been dropped in water.
Uh-huh.
You know one of the common things to do?
I don't know.
Put it in a bag of rice.
Well, that would make sense, I guess.
Yeah, it makes sense. Rice absorbs moisture.
Yep.
So it said if you have a cell phone or like a camera or something mm-hmm. that you've dropped in water, this doesn't work if it's Coke or
right.
or beer or something like
water.
That. But if it's just water,
right.
bury it in a bag of rice or in a tub of rice,
right.
cover it, and leave it there for at least a day or two.
Microwave it for 15 to 20 minutes.
Don't do the microwave.
Okay.
Adam is just kidding on that one. Just put it in. You're going to have somebody do that. Put it in a bag of rice, not in the microwave. And over a couple of days, the rice will absorb a lot of that moisture, and chances are you'll be up and running. So I thought that was an interesting fact. And
that is cool.
I didn't think about that, but I said, hey, that makes a lot of sense. And people said it works. All right, phone number 970-241-8801. Extension 1. Do not microwave your electronics. That is not a good thing to do. But you can indeed. I got a Twitter, but not from somebody. Oh, here we got a Twitter.
Oh, awesome.
Maybe not appropriate for today's show, but can Adam recommend some digital? This is from Wandering Texan.
Excellent.
Can Adam recommend some digital SLR resource websites?
There's two that I think that come right to my three, kind of. I got to look up the third one. But
now, SLR, real quickly, that's your single lens reflex. That's your digital cameras that you can change the lenses.
Exactly.
Okay.
The two that come right to mind, that the most updated one is DP Review, Digital Photography Review, dpreview.com. They're owned by Amazon, so they're always updated. They have great reviews. They do lenses and cameras, and that's about it. They don't review printers and all this other
stuff. They have a forum there also, right?
They have a great forum.
Okay.
Yeah, tons of forums.
So it looks like maybe that's what he's looking for, is maybe some help with SLRs.
Yep. So DP Review is a great place to go to get the forums and all of that. Now,
sure.
The other one, you know, I'm wondering whether it would meet his needs. There's Steve's Digicams that just does reviews.
But that's strict reviews.
Yeah, and then let's see. The other one I'm thinking is something like Imaging Resource, but I have to look it up before I give out the URL on that.
So that was from Wandering Texan via Twitter. So we got our first Twitter question. We appreciate
Very cool.
that. You can Twitter us at HelpMeRick. Or
I'll be looking up
digital.
That website while we take this phone call. Hi, you're on the Public Affairs Computer Show with Rick and Adam. What can we do for you?
Hi, Rick.
Hello there.
I just started to college. I'm 82, but
Good
I started to college, and I'm going to need a printer for my computer.
Okay.
Yep. What kind should I buy?
If I were you, do you think you need color?
No.
If you don't need color, I would go out and get yourself either a Brother or a Hewlett-Packard laser printer, black and white laser printer.
And what do they run? Do you have any idea?
Usually for the Brothers, about $140, and on upward, between the Brother and HP, upward to $250 at the most. But what's going to happen is you're going to be tempted by some of those color inkjet printers for $79, but you're going to spend far more money in ink and replacement of the cartridges for the inkjet than you will the little laser printer. You may only buy laser printer cartridges once every 18 months,
yeah,
if that.
Oh, good.
So
that's good.
They're fast. They don't dry up. They don't clog up. And the cartridges and the replacements are going to be far less than an inkjet. So that's what I would suggest. If you think you need color, you can get a color laser printer, again, a Brother or a Hewlett-Packard, for around $250. And
no,
I think
no,
I've even
no, no.
seen some for $199. But
no,
if you don't need the color, I wouldn't worry about
black.
It.
Look, I'm totally blind, and color doesn't mean anything to me.
Well, that's...
Well, and if you're going to school, chances are you don't need to have color for your professors either, so I think the laser printer would be perfect for you.
Okay, now how about spyware? I'm not online.
Okay.
And I don't know whether I should be...
I'm going to bet, though, if you're going to be going to school, you're going to want to be online. Now, whether you decide to do that at school or go to the library, that's up to you.
Uh-huh.
If you decide to do it at home, you definitely want to get yourself protected on your computer with a good antivirus and a good anti-spyware program. For antivirus, we like either AVG or Avast are the two antivirus programs we like. And for anti-spyware, you can get SpyBot Search and Destroy, or Super Anti-Spyware. I have all those linked up at helpmerick.com.
All right.
Okay.
Where are you located?
I am located everywhere.
Okay.
What I do is on-site. Everything I do is on-site. I don't have
okay.
an office.
All right. That's
okay.
fine. Okay, thank you very much.
Good luck in school.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Me too, and I don't know whether I lost any of my memory or not, but... We'll find out.
You're going to find out. Good luck.
Good luck.
Bye.
Thanks.
Good
970-241-8801, extension 1, or you can Twitter us at Help Me Rick or at Talking Digital. Did you get one?
No, it was actually a phone message. But I did find one of the main sites also is imaging-resource.com.
Okay.
And so and they have a forum also that's broken down into the different kinds of cameras, so you just pick which kind of camera you have.
That was for Wandering Texan.
Yeah. So either one of those would work pretty well.
Wandering Texan just responded again, and he says, I've had a point-and-shoot for a few years, but before that was all Nikon 35mm SLRs.
Uh-huh.
He says he's ready to take the next step.
Yeah, I think the Nikon D70 is a nice move up if he's wanting to stay with Nikon. Nikon and Canon, it's getting to the point now where you just pick whichever one you want because they're all good between those two. But the Nikon D70 is a good entry-level camera. The Canon XSI is a good entry-level SLR. Both of those are very good and probably have more features than any camera he's ever owned. And are well under the $700 limit.
So. It's amazing where the prices for SLRs have gone.
Yeah,
it's
you can
crazy.
Buy an SLR now for $400.
But so. I think this also gives us a chance to talk about saving money again.
Right.
And interject what you've done. You were a Canon SLR.
Yeah, I was an
digital SLR.
SLR
for 2 or 3 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you decided to do what?
I did.
And Adam's a big-time photographer.
Yeah. Yeah, I enjoy photography a lot, but it got to the point where all the cameras were so good, and the SLRs are expensive only because you have to buy nicer lenses for them. You have to do stuff. And they take beautiful, beautiful pictures, but I found all I was doing was I didn't ever take my camera with me because it was too heavy, took up too much space, and it was only when I was doing the occasional wedding or something like that, then there's something like that, that I was really pulling out my SLR.
Mm-hmm.
And my kids all have these little portable cameras, and my wife does, and I was really jealous because they always had their cameras with them. So what I did is I sold all my SLR equipment, and I bought a Canon XS10IS. whole bunch of S sounds, but the SX10IS has a 560 millimeter zoom lens on it. If you're talking 35 millimeter, has a 560 millimeter zoom lens on it. It shoots beautiful video,
image stabilization,
and you can buy it online for around $320. So it really is a beautiful
and
camera.
Quality wise,
I can tell the difference, but only if I really am printing something that's 20 inches. You know, I don't see it in your day to day prints. You don't see any difference at all, and even then, it's easy to sharpen it up. When you buy an SLR, one thing you need to know about an SLR digital camera versus a point-and-shoot is the SLRs generally are made assuming that the photographer knows how to fix the pictures later in the software. Mm-hmm. They don't come out looking as saturated and as sharp as they would on a standard point-and-shoot camera.
They're not doing as much processing
right,
in the camera.
Because when you use a point-and-shoot camera, it does a lot of the work for you. It sharpens the picture, makes the reds and greens brighter, and it does all of those. A lot of times if somebody gets an SLR, they are kind of thrown off a little bit because while it does take nice pictures, the pictures are a little bit fuzzier. They don't have that sharp crispness to them as they do out of a point-and-shoot. And some of that's the lens, but a lot of it is because they expect you to put it into Photoshop Elements or something like that and do all that work on your own.
Yeah, so think about that out there, wandering Texan, that what are you going to do with the camera, and do you really want to spend $750+, or if what you're doing is going to get by fine with a point-and-shoot with these. And Nikon, I believe, just came out with a Super Zoom all-in-one too, didn't it?
Yeah, they did. Well, they had the D80, and now they've got the D90. And the D90 is a 25X zoom, I forget what it is.
It's got to be 700
millimeters or something like that.
But that's an all-in-one, right?
All-in-one, yep. And, both companies have it. The really cream of the crop of the point-and-shoot high-zoom lens cameras is the Canon SX1, and it shoots high-definition video, and it shoots RAW. It does all this fancy stuff.
But it's
everything
also
an SLR would.
But it's also
but it's
a point-and-shooter.
It's all compact, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's really
how new is that
nice
one?
Camera.
Is that a new one this year?
It's new to the U.S. as of this month or last month, but it's been overseas now for the past 6 months.
Cool. 970-241-8801, extension 1 is our phone number, or you can Twitter us at HelpMeRick or at Talking Digital, and we'll try to answer your question through there. We're monitoring our Twitters, and we appreciate
my wife
the wandering Texan. Did she Twitter you or
topic.
Text you?
No, she just texted me.
Well, I'm glad she wasn't listening 15 minutes ago.
Yeah. Anyway.
All right. Some other money-saving ideas. I think the other one that people that are using high-speed internet overlook a lot, particularly if you have a lot of out-of-town people you like to talk with on the phone, or if you have people, there's a few people that have overseas folks they like to talk to, is utilizing Skype. Skype is a service that is doing telephone calls over the internet. Use a headset. If both sides have Skype, you can talk internet or computer to computer with a video cam if you like for free, no matter where the person is anywhere in the world. And that's a pretty good savings right there. Or if you are traveling overseas or you have people that are overseas you need to talk to and you want to talk to them via the telephone, you can use Skype to make those calls for up to 80% less than you would pay if you were using your landline. So that's Skype, and Skype is a wonderful service if you've never used it, never tried it. It's even fun if you have somebody domestically. People always say, well, I have free long distance now. You don't have free long distance.
Right.
People say, I have free long distance on my cell phone. No, you don't.
You're paying $35 a month
exactly.
Or $60 a month for your free long distance.
You're paying for it. And a lot of times the free, quote-unquote, long distance people say they have is later in the evening and on weekends. And if you're not making calls during those times or it's an inconvenient time to make a call, then that's not really saving you any money. So don't get caught up in the fact that your cell phone is free.
Yeah.
Because if you utilize some of these other services, you may even be able to cut your price of your cell phone.
Yeah.
Because you'd be able to cut down on the number of minutes you're using.
It's funny. There was a study, and I can't find it, so the figure is way off, I'm sure. But
just make one up.
Okay, I will. A study that was talking about text messaging.
Okay.
And the people who pay for the unlimited text messaging, saying that the text messages, you can get all of them for free, were figuring with the number of text messages the average person does in a month who pays for the all-in-one plans, their text messages were something like 60 cents each. So it was, it's not free. You're just paying for
it. You're always paying it somewhere or another.
Now, I utilize my free text messaging to no end, so I think I do thousands a month, but but a lot of people don't, and they pay for that. So, another thing I thought of for saving money, this is a big one.
Okay.
Free software.
Yes.
Now,
how we miss that one?
Don't surf the internet for free software. That's
bad
idea. But
bad
we're going to give you some free software ideas. The first one is, if you need a good antivirus that's free, AVG, free.avg.com, or go to Help Me Rick and look at AVG. That is the best free antivirus out there, and no one will argue with that unless they don't know what they're talking about.
The salespeople will.
The salespeople will. Yeah, that's right. The guys who pay $150 to take all the garbage off your computer will. other one, a big one that will save you tons of money. Microsoft Office costs at minimum $120 if you get it on sale.
Right.
Unless you get it on a really good sale.
That's Word and Excel and PowerPoint.
Word, Excel, and PowerPoint. Microsoft Office costs that much. You can get a program that's 100% compatible with all three of those programs for free. And that's Sun Microsystems, OpenOffice.org.
Yep.
Go to OpenOffice.org, and you can even make it open the brand new Microsoft Word 2007 files.
Mm-hmm.
All of those things, and so
that's
really
Mac
all you need.
Or PC.
Mac or PC or Linux.
Yeah, or Linux.
So you can put it on all of them.
Comes with Linux, so a lot of people already have that
on. That's right.
Yeah, those are two big ones. Now, another one that's free that I think will save you money in the long run is using an alternative browser like Firefox or Opera or even Chrome.
I am a Chrome addict.
Chrome is...
I have not looked back. Mm-hmm. I keep Firefox open. That's how I do my...
tweets and things.
That's kind of how I run my Twitter. Well, Stumble. Stumble is one of the few things that keeps me coming back to Firefox.
Right.
I am so hooked on Chrome. It is so fast. So it's just chrome.google.com.
That's Google's new browser.
Chromium is now on Linux now. Did you see that? There's
no.
a Chromium beta now for Linux. So.
Cool.
Very, very fast and very stable. And
very safe.
And fun.
Because it doesn't do ActiveX.
Exactly.
So, yeah, and they just came out with another beta for Google Chrome.
Just put it on last night, and it's fast.
I know, and it's faster than the first one, which is crazy because you open it, and the browser opens.
Yeah.
Faster than IE, which is
now,
pretty fast.
If you want another fun browser, and when you say fun, you know, surfing the internet is what it is. You go and you see web pages. But the new Safari 4, if you go to Safari, I think it's safari.apple.com or just apple.com and
/Safari.
Download the Safari beta, Safari 4 is very fast, and it has some very cool visual effects. Your history is done as thumbnails that kind of twirl around and things. And it's a fun browser to use. I really like Safari 4 a lot. It's just... Chrome just is so clean, and I'm a minimalist when it comes to running stuff like that, and I love how clean Chrome is, and it works very, very well.
Google did with Chrome what they've done with everything else. They made it clean, they made it quick, and they made it intuitive.
I usually switch AOL people and people who have been using Internet Explorer and don't know why. I usually switch them to Chrome. I just say, you don't have to use this, but look what it does.
Mm-hmm.
That's the last time they ever see Internet Explorer or AOL. It just is so clean and so easy to
use. And for people out there wondering about browsers, a browser is, like Adam just mentioned, all it is something that you use to view the Internet. So I like to explain like a television. Chances are in your house you have at least two different brands of televisions. They both do the same thing. They both work the same way. They just have two different brand names. On the computer... Your browser is basically the same thing. You have two different brands of browser. You cannot remove Internet Explorer, so don't try to do that. People say, well, is it going to take the place
until Windows 7 comes out.
Well, but you can't remove it, can you?
Yeah.
We better remove it or go back to IE7.
No, I heard you can take Internet Explorer out of Windows 7.
We'll see.
I heard there's a checkbox in there somewhere. So.
Interesting. But no, you can leave Internet Explorer on there, and unfortunately there are sites out there that you still have to use Internet Explorer for. If you're doing some banking websites use some of the technologies that Internet Explorer utilizes to do the things you need to do on banking, so you'll have to log into that. I find that if I have to go to Internet Explorer once every 3 or 4 months, that's a lot.
Yeah,
I very rarely have to open it.
I can't remember the last time I had to do it.
But it's still on your machine, and by adding another browser, doesn't overload your machine, doesn't affect one or the other.
It actually makes it run faster
because
you're not using that Internet Explorer weighing things down.
And I mentioned to be safer by using those browsers because some of the technologies that Internet Explorer offers are unfortunately exploited by the bad guys.
Right.
And you're going to get different kinds of pop-ups, different kind of what are called drive-by downloads by using the other browser versus using the Google Chrome or Opera or Firefox. Yeah, so that's a good one. Free software is always a good thing. What else you got?
Let's see. Tune-ups. I think it's important to have a tune-up on your computer once in a while.
Mm-hmm. That'll just keep it running longer.
Through, and even if you think nothing's wrong with it, I still think it's a good idea to go in there and once in a while just have it cleaned up by somebody who knows what they're doing, not the $150 people, just the guys who know how to get off the garbage. I was trying to think if there's any other free software that we didn't. We mentioned Ubuntu earlier, but when I load on a new computer,
I like CCleaner. Speaking of cleanup.
Yep.
Speaking of cleanup.
Especially for people who feel
the need
to run registry.
Desire.
If they, just the cleanup for the basic cleanup.
And cleaning cookies.
Help. But I get people out there that need to, cleaning cookies. And also the people who run things that are registry cleaning programs.
Right.
Those things, you're just asking for trouble running a registry cleaning program.
However, I had a guy yesterday that had three of them.
Yeah.
On his machine.
Exactly. And they will cause problems if they aren't already, even if you don't know it. But the thing is with CCleaner, it has a little registry cleanup feature that I do like. It doesn't necessarily change anything. It's just, if you want to feel good about running it, all it does is looks for loose ends. Right. It looks for registry things, or the registry is kind of the skeleton that holds together Windows. And it just looks for things in the registry that don't connect up, things with missing ends. And that there's no problem with deleting those things. But don't run registry cleaners that are supposed to run through and fix mysterious errors and things like that.
And the other thing, when you're traveling around the internet looking for other software, including our registry or our CCleaner and AVG and things, if you search for those things on Google, I find that the people that are a little bit less savvy about the internet, and they do this on purpose, is their eyes, when they do a search, are always glued to the ads.
Right.
The ads are running on Google. The ads are always right at the top of your search results, and they'll say sponsored links.
Yep.
People ignore that little small print there, and on the right-hand side.
Right.
And it's funny, you have to learn to keep your computer clean. The best advice I always give new computer users is ignore all the advertisements.
Right.
Because a lot of the times, the advertisements, especially on search engines, are not going to be legitimate things.
Yeah.
I almost got sucked into one about 2 months ago as I was looking to upgrade my netbook. I had sent you, remember, Adam, I sent you that site?
Yep.
And it was supposedly out of Canada.
Or I sent it to you, I think.
Did you? Oh, that's right.
Or something.
That's right.
Yeah.
And these people were claiming to sell the same little laptops I was looking for up to $150 less. Well, as I researched it, and I even wrote to the people, and they wrote back and stuff, as I continued to research it, I ended up finding that it was a phishing website, meaning they were posing as a legitimate store, and it looked legitimate when you got to it, but after a little bit more research and just doing a little bit more thinking, it was a very cleverly disguised phishing scheme, which was designed to get your credit card, get your personal information, and who knows what they were going to do with it.
Right.
But it pays to be always a little bit cautious when you're looking at the web, and just like with anything in life, if it seems too good to be true, more than likely it is.
And if it's unclear what you're doing, if you're going there to download something and you can't quite tell where you're downloading it or what you're downloading, just back out because you're probably not in the right place, because the people who want to give you their product make it very obvious that that's what they're giving you.
Right.
If it looks like they're trying to lure you in and there's three buttons that say download and you don't know which one is the right one, just
bail.
Bail out of it. Call Rick or Adam and we'll get you lined up.
Yeah, get somebody to direct you the right way, because it is too easy to get taken these days, so be very careful.
I will keep people out of trouble through a phone call. If they just have a yes or no question, say, should I do this?
Yep.
I'll tell them exactly where to do it and how to do it, because I really don't need that much more virus problems and things like that to work on. I'm kind of sick of those.
Okay, we have just a few minutes left. If you have a quick Twitter you want to send us, at HelpMeRick or at Talking Digital, we'll answer your question, or we can probably sneak in one more phone call at 970-241-8801, extension 1. Again, we'll be back again next Tuesday for the KFM Spring Fund Drive. And so we hope that you participate all week long in the fund drive to keep KFM afloat. And we'll be in here helping them out next Tuesday to raise some cash.
They need a fund drive, too. My headphones are broken, and this keyboard little thing is broken.
The leg is broken.
It up, little leg. Man.
So we need your attention for the next week here at KFM.
Please.
And we'll be here next Tuesday to answer your questions and your tweets. If you're not a Twitterer, some people always, for years we've been doing this show, people say, I'm scared to call, I get a little bit embarrassed. Well, the Twitter is a good way for you to do it, because we'll get your question, and you won't even have to say who you are. We'll just read your question. You can be kind of anonymous, like Wandering Texan. That could be anybody. because I went to school in Texas, so I
That's
could
right.
I could theoretically be a wandering Texan.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Yeah, the
do you have some music queued up?
Oh, I do. Are you ready to play it?
In a few minutes. I just want to make sure you're ready
to go. Music is all queued up and ready to go. A couple other news things that I just thought were interesting that have been hitting lately. One that's funny is that Dell thinks they can sell a $2,000 laptop that's not even super powered.
I know it.
They think they can compete with Macintosh there, and it's got nothing to... I mean, it's...
Yeah.
It's horrible.
Thin.
The Atomo, which is some language... French, something for love,
yeah.
Italian, who knows. It looks like the MacBook Pro,
mm-hmm.
but that's about it. I don't get it. I just really can't understand.
In this economy, especially.
Oh, yeah. I
maybe they have enough money from their netbook sales to kind of float that one.
Oh, it's so bad. I just was blown away when I saw that.
I think one other quick news story on the way out here is just started coming break in the last couple of days is that some Washington, D.C. agency is wanting to sue or at least get the government to look into Google documents and Google's privacy.
Or cloud. It's the FTC. No, not the FTC.
I'm not sure. I don't know if the government is. Is it a government agency? Mm-hmm. They're asking the FTC.
Oh, maybe that's
it.
Maybe
right. They're asking the FTC to investigate all because of a few weeks ago there was a small glitch with Google documents that if you had about 10 different criteria that you met, you might have an issue.
Right.
And so I think Google in this next decade is going to become what Microsoft was in the 90s. They've gotten so big. They're a great big target. I think we're going to see that out there. They got a target on their back, and we're going to see those kinds of things. I use Google services all the time, and I think as long as you're good with your passwords, you change your passwords, you have good password security, you're going to be fine.
Absolutely.
Well, Adam, I think we better sign off for this month or for this week, and we'll be back again next Tuesday from noon to 1. But in the meantime, keep listening to KFM 88.1 and make sure to participate in the fun drive coming up this next week.